Greetings, listeners. You're listening to Colourful online and on DAB. A very warm welcome from me, Kenneth Tharp. I'm delighted to be back on Colourful in this second interview related to the African Concert Series. Before I introduce you to my special guest, let me tell you just a little bit about the African Concert Series. The world's first ever African Concert Series was launched in 2019 by the award-winning Nigerian-Romanian pianist Rebecca Amordio, featuring 10 monthly concerts in various venues, including the October Gallery and the Africa Centre. Described by the BBC World Service as the African art music makes a comeback, the programme of the series reflects the depth and diversity of what is known as African art music, the richly diverse genre of music which forms a bridge between Western classical music and traditional African music. I'm pleased to say that in 2021, the African Concert Series has returned, and as former director of the Africa Centre, I'm also very pleased to say that the Africa Centre is supporting this forthcoming series. The concerts are being streamed from the centre via the African Concert Series Facebook page and YouTube channels.
My first special guest today is an internationally acclaimed concert pianist. He was born in Nigeria from a Nigerian father and a West Indian mother.
His musical talent was spotted at a young age, and he went on to study at the Lucerne Music Centre as a student of Toby Blumenthal, and later graduated from Clare College, Cambridge, where he was a British Council scholar and where he received his Master of Arts degree in 1998. He is an associate of the Royal Academy of Music, where he also holds their exclusive teaching diploma. As an international concert pianist, he gave his New York debut in September 2000, performing Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue to a capacity audience at the Lincoln Centre, receiving rave reviews. His piano duo partnership with Jennifer McAuliffe is reputed to be amongst the most outstanding piano duos worldwide. In February 2004, they together launched as artistic directors the first ever Cayman Arts Festival in the Cayman Islands. He is in constant demand and as a specialist coach and adjudicator. He is also an acclaimed recording artist. His recording of Russian viola sonatas with Grammy Award-winning violist Elisha Nelson was met with critical acclaim. He is Assistant Professor of Music at the University College of the Cayman Islands and holds an MBA specialising in finance and marketing from the Open University in the UK. He is clearly a man of prodigious talents. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Mr. Glenn Inanga.
Thank you very much for having me on Colourful.
Very welcome. Despite my introduction, I'm assuming that not all our listeners will know your story or your journey. Tell us a bit about how your music journey started. How did you first get into music, and what were your what sparked that musical urge in you?
So it all began when I was about seven. My mother, West Indian mother, we had lots of cousins. In fact, we have lots of cousins. Many of them are in North America. We used to go for these family reunions, and we were living in Nigeria at the time. And the fascinating thing was, you know, we went to this one family reunion. I remember it was in Canada. And I was amazed that most of my cousins that I met at the reunion actually played the musical instrument. And up until then, though my mom was a music teacher, I'd never really shown that much interest or inclination in playing an instrument. And at that point, I said to my mom, when we came back to Nigeria, I said, "Mommy, I would like to learn to play the piano." And because the piano was already in the house, and she was a piano teacher and violin teacher, as well as a voice teacher, she said, "Well, that's perfectly fine. I will show you how it works." And of course, I was this little kid who was very obsessed with trying to, you know, be as good as he could be right from the very, you know, get-go. And it was, trust me, it was fun. I couldn't think of anything more fun to do when I was basically being shown how the music notes on the stage correspond to particular notes on the piano and how these corresponded to sounds that I really liked hearing. And I thought, wow, okay, that's it. I'm going to go on this journey. It's been great. I've never looked back since. So that's basically how it all started. I just wanted to learn how to play the pianos best as I could. And I was quite obsessed with the technical skill required to play almost any piece I wanted to play. And that basically fueled the desire to be as good as I could, despite the fact growing up in Nigeria at the time, people didn't really give much attention to, you know, that kind of a hobby, as they called it. But again, I was very fortunate. I crossed paths with some very influential figures in Nigeria who were part of the Musical Society of Nigeria, MUSON. And they discovered me in a sense and gave me opportunities to perform and to be noticed and to be showcased. And those led to other opportunities that helped to develop my talent internationally.
And at what stage did it become clear to you and maybe clear to your parents and others that you were going to pursue a career in music?
Now that's a different question. Pursuing a career is in particularly in an African household, is a very different thing to playing it as a hobby. I think I had to complete my first degree first. before they actually in at university, before they decided, okay, yeah, you can go off and do what you want. That was basically my father saying, you know, this is Nigeria, you're coming back to Nigeria, you better do something that people value. And that was definitely not music at the time. But even though I had, you know, the desire and the passion at the time to study music and to study the piano in particular, actually, at the Royal Academy of Music, that didn't happen until after Clare College, Cambridge. So it was a fascinating journey, and music, in a sense, this, you know, sort of got me back in. That's one thing I had a deep passion for, above and beyond anything else I did actually at the time. So I left the University of Cambridge saying to myself, okay, I want to go and learn how to play the piano really properly. And I was about 20 at the time, and I'll take it as it comes. And it's been an amazing journey, really. And having the freedom to explore that stage of my career was fantastic.
And I do empathize with that, my journey deciding to become a professional dancer, maybe a sort of mirror. I want to tell the listeners that we discovered, didn't we, when we were last time we met and were speaking before your previous concert at the Africa Center, that we had a family connection. Both our fathers were academics at the University of Ibadan. Both
That's
professors.
Right.
And my siblings went to the same school, to the international school in Ibadan, where your mother was the music teacher. So
That's
if anyone
correct.
Listening is connected with ISI, a big shout
there
out.
There you go.
and then, look, a question I've always wanted to ask someone like you, Glenn, as a concert pianist. We talk about the loneliness of the long-distance runner. Is being an international concert solo, as well as your wonderful partnership, performing on your own, what kind of pressures does that come with? And is it a lonely existence?
Majority of my performances to date have always been in partnership with another pianist, and also as a collaborative pianist with other instrumentalists. And I like that, you know, dual role of playing, you know, sort of being a participant in sort of, you know, putting this music together, but also being, you know, sort of contributing in quite a major way. So in the piano duo, for example, you're both a soloist and accompanist at the same time, and you're performing different roles in different passages of music. But the one thing I used to struggle with, when it didn't necessarily transfer to playing solo piano. So, you know, you'd have, because we played everything from memory. So, you know, you'd play a dual recital from memory, and then you'd go off and you'd try and do something on, not so much of a concerto, but a piano recital. And that the hardest thing there, being on your own, is you're having to create all the moments that you're going to respond to. So playing in collaboration with somebody else, you know, you're responding and having conversations with each other. When you're playing on your own, you're almost having conversations with yourself. But it's still stimulating in a very, very different way. And it's written, you know, most of the compositions are written with a slightly different focus. It's all coming from the one instrument. All the narratives are coming from the one instrument, and it can be lonely, particularly after the concert when you sort of go home alone, sort of thing. But whilst you're on stage, it doesn't feel lonely, I must say. You know, you actually feel the vibes and the energy of the audience, you know, there listening with you as you're creating, you know, each moment as it unfolds. And I always say to people, I try to see myself as the messenger through which the composer is going to speak in terms of, you know, what the composer has written. And it only comes to life when you, you put your fingers to the instrument, in a sense, and you give a performance of the music that's been notated on the musical page. So that to me is, again, something that I find truly fascinating, and that wonderful tripartite relationship between, you know, the composer, the performer, and the listener. So you're not necessarily alone on the platform. I think the loneliness only stems the fact you're spending many, many hours practicing on your own. And like I said afterwards, you know, when everybody has gone home, it's just you rather than you and somebody else. And they're discussing the performance because you're just sharing that performance experience together.
I wanted to pick on one thing very briefly. You talked about playing without music. Do you always play without music?
Yeah, so many people, there are lots of different schools of thought in this. Some people think it shouldn't matter whether you play with music or not. I personally like to play without music because I liken it to an actor who is sort of acting out a role on the screen. You know, you don't see them with their lines in front of them and them reading them out, even though they could act just as well, almost. They bring it to life in a sense, and they inhabit, I think, the role of the character. And I like to feel like, you know, I don't have any inhibitions when I have committed something to memory and I can sort of present it. It doesn't always mean that you have the time to do so, but that is the ideal kind of default setting that you'd like to achieve, if you can. And, you know, like I say, many people don't necessarily agree with this because they don't think it should matter at the end of the day. You should be able to just do, you know, either with the music or without the music, but the music should sound the same. But I think you take this to the next level for each particular individual performer whenever you have the chance to, and the time and latitude to be able to commit things to memory and then perform them after they've been internalized.
Talk a bit about the music that you're going to be playing in your concert. I would say perhaps for some listeners, the idea of classical music emanating from the continent is in itself something of a mystery. What would you like to tell listeners about the program of music you're going to be playing and some of the composers?
Okay, great. I'm really glad you've asked that question because I thought long and hard about what it is that I wanted to play for the program. And I thought representative, I think, of the genre of African classical music, because I think this is dedicated to Nigerian composers. So I thought, as a tribute to Akinyuba, the late Akinyuba, who's just recently passed, that this was last year, that we could actually have his studies in African pianism, numbers 1 to 4. I've just discovered number 4 that I think it's really beautiful. And he only wrote 4 of these. And each one, in a sense, sort of explains how the piano can be used. It can be used in a sort of African rhythmic kind of way, whereby you're using the piano almost like a drum. So the rhythm is not so much about the melodies, even though the melodies come from, you know, from Nigerian, you know, for traditional music. The actual rhythms you're hearing, in a sense, are quite pronounced, and they tend to come from, you know, the sort of drumming you would get from specific parts of the Yoruba land. So I find, you know, the material he draws upon as well is quite really very, very nice. And the way it's, again, he's presenting in the Western classical tradition, several different themes have been sort of worked on and given lots of interesting rhythmic treatment. So I thought that would be something that captures, you know, the whole concept of African pianism. Those 4 different studies, and each one has got a different feel to it, but they're quite hard to play. They don't necessarily sound hard, but the hardest thing is really, you know, trying to decipher the rhythms that are being sort of depicted using Western notation. But they're beautiful once you get behind what it is that the composer is trying to say through these particular gestures, rhythmic gestures. And then 2 other pieces I'm also going to play against, a little festive sounding, are actually based, coming from the eastern part of Nigeria. As you know, Yoruba land is in the west. And I'm officially, because my father's from there, he's from the Ibibio tribe. And I discovered, basically, because we did an online sort of African concert series performance last time, that there are some composers out there who are listening. And one of them, Peter Silvano, sent me one of his compositions, about a couple of them. And one of them is titled Oborum. And this is basically a wooden slit drum that's used at many of these festivals. And so he wrote this piece that's just based on the sort of music you'd hear being played on this particular drum. And again, it's the same concept of rhythm, same concept of drumming, same concept of interesting rhythms. And one of the melodies is really a very sweet, sweet melody from that part of the country, which I haven't heard for several years. I don't know the actual melody itself, but the feel of the melody reminds me of the trips I used to take to the village over the summer holidays. And then the next piece I'm also going to play is actually, again, another wooden slit drum, but the different part of the country, still east, but this is from Igbo land. I played the first movement of Ufie, again, online, and this time I found, discovered that there were 2 other movements. I'm going to play the 3rd of this, again, quite energetic, really very interesting music. So yes, lots of rhythmic sort of treatment to many of these wonderful African melodies or Nigerian melodies that you're going to be hearing right through the program.
Fantastic. I think it would be nice to give listeners a taste. Perhaps is this time for the Ayobankale?
Yes, this is the Egun Variations. Thank you.
wonderful to hear that, Aya Bankele piece. Glenn, you mentioned Akinuba, and I think you had a very special relationship with him, and I'm sorry to hear that he only passed just last year. Tell us a little bit more about him and about your relationship.
Okay, so my relationship with the late Akinuba, Professor Akinuba, goes back to 1977. I was only 4 years old. And we had the Festival of the Arts in Nigeria called Festac 77. And I remember he composed a theme song for that Festac 77. And I remember my mother reminding me, and I was about four, I was singing out at the top of my voice, Festac 77, 77 is here. And that's where it started. Right back then, I had no clue that I would meet this amazing man many, many years later on, after studying him in textbooks. My mother was doing sort of, Nigerian music composers when we were students at ISI. And that our paths would cross back in 2005 when he was having a series of symposia at Churchill College, University of Cambridge. And he invited me to participate. And that's when he introduced me to a wealth of repertoire that comes from the continent. And this whole movement of composers at the time who are really dedicating their lives to this. And it was around the same time. In fact, Joshua Zoigwe lived down the road to me in University of Baden at the time. When I was sort of interested in taking up the piano more seriously. In fact, I came around to the house and gave me one lesson. I remember that very well. But I look back on it and I think to myself, wow, I had this wonderful exposure to this culture. He opened up so many doors for me in terms of understanding this whole new world of Nigerian art music. And I really feel very honored to be playing his works and to be able to understand what it is he was about. Because when I was a child, there's no way I could appreciate what it is that they were trying to do. And even when I was at college, definitely not. It's only now I really feel, well-equipped to be able to get underneath a lot of this music, not just from a technical point of view, but also from, an artistic point of view. And that's what I particularly enjoy. Because the thing is, I think as a student, you always want to do the right thing. Everything is done by the book. And if you approach this music sort of doing it by the book, and this is something I find quite interesting, actually, you will not quite get underneath the skin of the music. A bit like trying to play jazz and sort of approaching it from a very classical standpoint, it will never work. You almost have to sort of speak the language and immerse yourself in the music. And that's something I've had to do in my approach, sort of deciphering what's been written by these amazing composers. They try to represent this. And so you're trying to bring it to life. You really, truly bring it to life and inhabit it, if that makes any sense. So that's generally what I try and, sort of dig deep to think of what it was like growing up, melodies and all the rhythms I used to hear, how did they make me feel? And there's those same feelings you try to evoke when you're trying to play the music. And that's, in a sense, I think the approach that works for me when I'm playing this music.
Thank you so much for that. One of the things that I think people associate very much with traditional African music is its connection with dance.
Yes.
That innate connection with movement. And I suppose, I'm trying to think what's the best thing to ask here. Do you feel that sort of sensibility and that cultural connection is as strong in the classical music that's coming from the continent and in some of the composers whose work you're playing?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, Africans, or in fact Nigerians, I can speak for at least, they dance. They find any excuse to dance. It could be a funeral, it could be a wedding, it could be the fact that you just passed your exams, it could be the fact that you're enjoying eating the food that you're eating. Everything, movement and dance is just such a natural expression of how they feel. Definitely, there's always, I can't even remember the last piece I played that didn't have a sense of movement to it, if that makes sense. Sort of trying to inspire you to move. And I think it just comes with part of the culture. And that's definitely something that I feel it's really growing. I mean, many of the composers out there are really digging deep and working hard to try and find bits of material that they want to present using the Western classical notation.
Well, interesting enough, that innate dance sensibility is also found, I think, in music from other parts of the world. I think it was one piece, I think, that we were talking about playing to listeners, the Rhapsody Espanol.
Oh, yes. The Rhapsody Espanol by Ravel. That's basically, I think his mother was from Spain. And he grew up listening to many of these wonderful rhythms. And the feria, again, is a festive dance, and it's full of energy. And who doesn't like dance music? I can't think of anybody who doesn't like dance music. And it's very infectious when you listen to it. So yes, definitely, you know, and in fact, another movement of the Rapatía Española is the habanera as well, which many people know. You probably heard the habanera in Carmen. Dun, 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 and that rhythm, that specific Spanish rhythm, is something that he used. And again, some of these other pieces as well, and also Debussy's pieces as well. In one of his estomp pieces, the second movement as well. Again, that sense of, you know, bum, 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 bum kind of rhythm. So yeah, you're right. It's definitely something that people have always felt is natural. And I can't imagine people listening to music and not moving, though. I mean, music and movement go together, you know. I see little children, the minute they hear music, they start moving. You know, it's a natural way of expressing yourself. And so it's no surprise, you know, that the two are inextricably linked.
I think that's such an acute observation. And, you know, being half Nigerian, and obviously I've experienced that in Nigerian culture when I've been there. You know, over here, when people, so many people, when they think of dance, they think it was, oh, I can't dance. It's something other people do. Or they think about people performing on a stage. It's not embedded in everyday culture, as you said, where it's a housewarming party, it's you know, political speech, it's anything. Let's listen to some music, to that Ravel. I think there's a recording of you with Jennifer in your piano duo playing that.
That's it, yes.
Let's listen. That was wonderful to hear. Thank you, Glenn. A cheeky question, maybe. I was very impressed that your debut was with Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. I mean, one of my favorite pieces. I think the last time I heard that live was with the Chinique Orchestra, who were also playing as part of this series with Stuart Goodyear. Well, the first one's not cheeky. Tell me about why you chose that piece for your debut and why you love it.
Well, I was actually asked to play. This was the Luzerne Music Center having their 20th anniversary concert, which they decided to invite a few alumni. And I was one of the very few alumni who were picked to perform, about four or five of us. And I flew from London to New York they said, could you please play the Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue? In fact, they hired this orchestra and different people play different concerti. And I thought, right, that's it, I'm doing it. And I'd grown up hearing this piece from the age of 11, and my father brought me a score to this particular piece. So yes, I was right in there, very excited to get my teeth into it. I was asked to play it. That's basically why I had that as my New York debut.
I guess another reason I thought of that piece was because I saw Chinique playing that live. Chichi, the founder's granddaughter, was sitting on her mother's lap in front of me, and she couldn't stay still throughout the whole concert. especially during that piece, just clearly made her, actually made me want to dance, and somehow sitting in the restriction of a concert hall felt, we sort of felt almost unnatural as a response to that music. But my cheeky question was, apart from your own playing of it, is there any other particular recording of that, or who's playing of it, another musician who's playing of it you admire?
Now here's a big confession. I don't know what it is, but if there's a piece that I actually specifically play, I don't really listen to many other people playing that particular piece. I actually like to listen to other people playing other pieces, and then I actually am inspired by their approach to playing other pieces. But for some funny reason, it's not that I'm avoiding them. I don't seem to gravitate towards listening to recordings of what it is that I'm actually playing at the time. But I've heard quite a few recordings of this particular piece, and beside my good friend Wayne Marshall, of course, none of them particularly sort of jump at me, because it's very much sort of piece that you bring your own, you know, interpretations to it. And it does very, very well with a bit of improvisation as well. As we say, it's not Mozart, it's not Beethoven, in the sense that you have to be so strict about following whatever the composer has written. It lends itself to lots of cuts here and there if you want to put them in. Last weekend I was playing, it's actually my recital here in Cayman, and I was doing it as a piano solo. So I was playing the orchestra and the piano solo versions, the parts at the same time. And that was quite interesting to do. So it really works well in so many different formats. Sometimes you could do it with jazz band, sometimes you could do it with an action orchestra. And it's one of these colorful pieces in a sense, that I think lends itself to so much different treatment, depending on what your perspective on it is. I like it very much. Like I said, I don't think I've heard that many different recordings of this particular work.
Well, there's one piece that maybe will be the final piece that we hear from you. It's by Charles Camilleri, Summer Nights in Malta, and it's again for two pianos. And it has different, obviously, piece to Gershwin, but it has an energy. Would you like to introduce this?
Yes, this is Summer Nights in Malta. This is a concertino for two pianos and orchestra. It's a wonderful piece, full of energy. It's in three movements, but you're going to be hearing the first movement. Charles Camilleri, a Maltese composer, in fact, celebrated Maltese composer. Jennifer and I had the pleasure of meeting him and had the honor of working with him whilst he was alive. And, you know, he had all these amazing ideas, and he was very, very talented. In fact, things came to him quite effortlessly. And this particular piece is quite tuneful, very catchy. I know many people who hear this particular work say, gosh, yeah, I really like that. So he had a very good gift for being able to write things that were very, very accessible to the general public. And that was definitely a gift that he had.
Thank you so much for that introduction. Glenn, before we play out with that music, I just want to tell our listeners that please tune in for the next three concerts coming up in the African Concert Series. You can hear Glenn's concert on Friday, the 26th of February. Before that, you can hear the Chineke String Duo coming up this Sunday, on Sunday, the 21st of February. And then on Sunday, the 28th of February, you can hear the Chineke Chamber Ensemble. Glenn and Anger, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait to hear your concert. We're very jealous
of you
in the Cayman Islands. Let's play out with that wonderful piece with you and Jennifer playing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me on the show. And thank you to Colourful Radio and Rebecca. Thank you very much.